The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis. This is Music Weekly. This week, having warmly received a track from Luke Haynes' concept album on wrestling last week, this week we speak to him, the man behind the Auteurs, Black Box Recorder, talks to the programme about wrestling and more. New tracks from Willie Moon, 254 and Fanzine, and what do you need to know about the outer fringes of experimental rock and electronica? Our expert Jennifer Allen will tell us what to look out for. All to come in this week's Music Weekly from The Guardian. Hello and welcome along. Joining me for the ride this week is Guardian Film and Music's Michael Hann. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Alexis.
And Rebecca Nicholson from The Guardian Guide.
Hello.
Hello, Rebecca. Just before we get into this week's programme, I have two questions that each only require one word answer. Stone Roses reunion, yes or no, Michael?
Meh.
Rebecca?
Bored.
Young people today. It's just shocking.
I'm not young, I just don't really care.
No, I'm not bothered. Either way, that's a much longer answer than I should have given. But yeah, you know, who can deny, ultimately though, who are we to deny the right of musicians to make a living by doing their job? I think that the problem is with the culture of nostalgia that surrounds rock music that means that the best way for musicians to make money is by doing precisely what they did 30 or 40 years ago. Those are my thoughts on the matter. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the matter. Why not write in to the Guardian blog and tell us all about it? Next question, one word answer please. A Westlife split. I want one word to sum up your feelings at this sad time. Michael.
Despair, Alexis, despair.
Despair. Rebecca.
I'm really worried that this is going to reveal something about my psychology, because you're doing it so quickly. Like, what's the first word that comes into your head?
What is the first word that comes into your head? Is it something... What, elephants?
When people say, what's the first word that comes into your head, I always think of elephants.
Okay, there you go. There you have it.
That would have been apter with the Stone Roses, wouldn't it, to have said elephants?
Yeah. Stone. This is the solid gold of journalism
in
the world of Web 2.0, I think you'll find. Let's get cracking with the programme. We begin with Auteurs frontman, or former Auteurs frontman, and later Black Box Recorder frontman, or sort of frontman, Luke Haynes. As you will have heard on last week's podcast when Jude Rogers singled out one of his tracks for discussion, his new concept album is called 9½ Psychedelic Meditations on British Wrestling of the 1970s and Early 80s. Once again, desperately going for that all-important performance slot on Strictly Come Dancing. It went down very well, both in the studio and the blog, anyway, the track. Earliest day, I popped round to Luke Haynes' flat, and we had a chat about wrestling and other things.
I am writing a rock opera in the key of existential misery. These Japanese eyes tell stories of ancient wisdom, and they're looking at you. I'm an esoteric practitioner of many an occult discipline. The unveiling of the pseudo-sumo superstar takes place tonight in Crewe.
Okay, let's start with the concept of the album. I suppose the first time I noticed that you had an interest in wrestlers was when you used the photo of, is it Exotic Adrian Street? Is that the guy's name? And that was on the cover of Black Box Recorder's England Made Me.
Yes.
What prompted that?
Well, it was actually our second choice of cover. The first choice was a photograph of the England football team from 1938, giving it the old David Bowie at Victoria Station. So the record company at the time were quite into promoting Robbie Williams, and they didn't really kind of think that that was the sort of thing that they should have on a sleeve. So we came across the photograph of Adrian Street with his father in a coal mine, giving it the old Brian Connolly from Sweet.
For the benefit of younger listeners who don't remember the wrestling on TV, this guy was sort of a kind of glam rock wrestler, a sort of like faux effeminate wrestler. That was a shtick.
Yeah, I think it was pretty kind of opportunist, because he was originally in a tag team called Hell's Angels, and I don't think he was ever particularly into glam rock, as far as I know.
So what appealed to you about wrestling? What appealed to you sort of as a theme for this record? Why did you take it on?
I'd touched on it before, and I'd used Kendo Nagasaki in a lyric previously, and I just had this idea going around my mind about wrestling that I wanted to do something with it, and I had all these sort of like vaguely kind of pretentious ideas about I'll do a screenplay or something, or I'll do a play or something, and I just thought, well, you know, I actually make records, so why not just do a proper concept album about wrestling? And the reason I think I did it is because my dad's kind of ill at the moment, pretty ill, and it was something he took me to.
I was trying my best to understand how a beautiful bouncing baby becomes an horrible man. As a child, I thought I'd grow up to be a dancer, but I became a fighter, just like my mother. So I left Bradford, looking for a new groom. I found him in a greasy spoon. He pushed his food around the plate in contemplation.
I don't really think it's about the underbelly at all. It's not a particularly dark, for want of a better word, record. It's sort of willfully nostalgic and affectionate.
I mean, was it a kind of dark world, particularly the world of wrestling? Because the thing I always remember about it was people saying, when it used to be on a Saturday afternoon, Queen Mother watches this.
Well, it certainly wasn't middle class or anything like that. Because remember, it was on ITV, and you know, middle class people didn't watch ITV. I remember my mum sort of didn't like the idea of it being sort of ITV, and we were kind of lower middle class. But I think it was a hard world. I think the best description of it, someone said this to me, it was probably like being in a low level indie band, but you get the shit kicked out of you at the end of the night, which some indie bands deserve that, obviously.
Saturday afternoon. Saturday afternoon. There's evil Knievel, cat weasels, false teeth fly out of the telly and land at my feet.
You describe the album as psychedelic. Why is it psychedelic? Why are the sort of meditations on the lives of these wrestlers sort of phantasmagorical and strange? Why did you have that as a thing?
We're kind of post-ironic now, and I didn't want to do a kind of either reportage, like this is, you know, a historical document of what actually happened, because I think the truth is not that interesting. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. It's just that it was, as I said before, it was a hard life, and there's only so many songs you could probably write about, you know, getting in a transit van and, you know, it not and staying in a B&B. And I didn't want to fall back on irony. So I wanted it to be through a kind of childlike. So the best way of doing that, I thought, is to put the wrestlers into psychedelic situations. Because at the time, I believed it all.
Your music continually sort of picks at the 70s. You've been doing this for you know, a long time. You keep returning to it in different ways. What is it about that decade that obsesses you? Why is it such a sort of fertile...
Stuck in the same old groove, aren't I? No, I don't know. Well, maybe I am. Maybe I don't care. you know, I think it's to do with your first memories of stuff. And it's like a lot of the music I listen to now... It's even earlier than the stuff I remember, but it's somehow the kind of stuff that's indelibly stamped. So I think it's for early memories, just other things that stay with you. And it's also, I don't particularly want to write about now, because rock and roll doesn't seem to be the medium to do that anymore, because there's all this sort of social media and whatnot. Whatever's going on in the world, if it's, you know, in Syria and Libya and stuff, it's all on social media, so maybe people aren't writing protest songs about it. They don't need to. Yeah. You know, you can never be that up to date.
I mean, you decline to tour these days. You're not keen on touring. You do more sort of one-off performances and things like that, don't you?
I don't like touring. It's no place for a 44-year-old man. And I can get more done. You know, I've got a thing I've written with Cathal Coughlan called The North Sea Scrolls. I did that and I've done this. So it's kind of writing two albums. If I was on tour, I would only be able to do one or half an album. And I don't think it's really... It's, you know, it's not that necessary for me to do that.
So tell me about this the project you've done with Cathal Coughlan.
It's called The North Sea Scrolls. It's with Cathal Coughlan and Andrew Muller. Cattle and I have written this sort of song cycle. Cattle described this to a guy in an Irish pub that he'd written a song cycle, and the guy said, "Fuck off, it's a concept album." So it is it's a concept album. And it's sort of a kind of secret history of Britain again, and Ireland, and a bit of Australia. It's a sort of a, because obviously from our descent, I'm an Englishman, Cattle's an Irishman, Andrew Muller is an Australian. So essentially, it's an Englishman, an Irishman, and an Australian walk into a bar and tell a few tall tales.
Yeah.
Then I think we're going to put it on do a little run of it in London. Possibly in March.
So you say it's a sort of concept album, is there a performance element to this? Is there kind of like...
It's very much, each song has a narration that Andrew Muller does. The idea is that the three of us are kind of demented explorers, okay, and we've sort of found this knowledge, and we're the messengers, and we're sharing this with the audience, this stuff of what really happened. You know, Tim Harding came to London because the NHS provided free heroin, as we all know, but he ended up being an MP. This is what the scrolls tell us. There's a song about the funeral of Jimmy Savile called Savile's Seven Funerals, which is one of Cattle's.
Why does Jimmy Savile have seven funerals?
It's the kind of the ritual, you know, the loss of this man. There's a song on it about... Chris Evans, who's not the man we know him as now, but Chris Evans is actually a visionary and a seer who ends up being burned at the stake for his beliefs. He's a martyr. Giant haystacks in heaven. Giant haystacks
in heaven. Luke Haynes there. The album 9½ Psychedelic Meditations on British Wrestling of the 1970s and Early 80s is out on November the 7th. Right, some new music to hear now. Something to listen to from each of us, as ever. We're going to start this week with Rebecca's choice. /2:54 with Scarlett. Rebecca, you brought that in.
I did bring it in.
Only a matter of time, I think, before somebody did that. Not bring it in, made a record that sounded like that. Every early 80s band has been mined for inspiration in recent years. Oh, hello. With the exception of Susie and the Banshees. And there's somebody doing Susie and the Banshees. Tell us all about it.
Well, a lot of people say that Warpaint are a bit Susie and the Banshees-y.
Susie and the Banshees-y.
Banshees. Susie and the Banshee-ch, we might call it. it's funny because I was talking to Michael about this on the way up, and he said he thought it sounded very current. You're saying you think it sounds very 80s. I think it sounds really 90s, especially the
what
introduction.
What sort of 90s?
Like, it made me... I listened to it yesterday... And it made me go back to the best of the Smashing Pumpkins, which I had a lovely listen to on the way home.
Wow.
On the tube. So it reminds me of being a teenager. Mm-hmm. I think it's nostalgic in quite a truncated sort of way. But it's two sisters. I imagine that they both wear a lot of black and have very cool things on their bedroom walls.
Yeah. Or alternatively, they've got a big Rocky Horror Picture Show poster on the bedroom walls. Michael, did you like this?
I did quite like it, but I have to say, I have spent large chunks of today sitting in traffic jams on the North Circular listening to the Florence and the Machine album on repeat.
How was that?
And so, I'm slightly up to my ears with moody gothisms just at the moment.
Yep.
So I wasn't approaching it in the best way. Mm-hmm. Now, when... Rebecca said she thought it sounded 90s, and I was the one who thought it sounded current, because it sounds like a post-XX record. Those spindly guitar lines, feel.
Mm-hmm.
There's a strong melody there, which I think is what saves it, because otherwise I think it would sound a bit like an assembly of cliches. But you mentioned Warpaint as well. I think they've supported Warpaint on tour, haven't they? I suspect they're their friends of the paint. As we call
There's
them.
There's no one calls them.
But yeah, but also, you know, it's best part of 5 minutes, that song, and you've got the mood inside the first 90 seconds. I'm not saying they should cut it at 90 seconds, but there's not enough going on to sustain the 5 minutes.
Have you heard other stuff by them, Rebecca? Is this indicative of their oeuvre?
I think it is. It's the best one. There's an EP, there's four tracks. This is the best one.
Okay. I don't know what I make of it, to be honest with you. I quite like it. I'm a bit neither here nor there. I quite like it. I think it is quite a good song. It's a good, strong melodic song. I as with so many bands that recall bands of my youth, or you know, bands of the past, I struggle to imagine the circumstance in which, if I wanted to listen to music like this, I would put this on rather than, I don't know, Hyena by Susan the Banshees or whatever, you know.
But then equally, you could have made that argument, Alexis, when in the mid-80s, when
we were listening
to bands who sounded like The Byrds. Why don't we just go, well, we did eventually go back and listen to The Byrds. But it didn't stop us thinking that early Primal Scream were some work of genius. We were, of course, both wrong about that. But
no, I agree. I do agree. And, you know, it's a good song. Well, there's 100 10-inch blue vinyl signed copies of that available. It'll be on iTunes too. It's out now on Fiction Records.
Do you think you want to make plain that the 100 blue vinyl signed copies are not in our possession? They are.
Yeah, they're not over there. They're not like in the corner.
Don't come here for them. We haven't got them.
We're not like knocking them out. No. Anyway, look, the next track is my choice. That's Willie Moon and I Want to Be Your Man, out on the 24th of October. I brought that in. I thought it was interesting. I thought there is obviously a disparity between the way Willie Moon looks and some of the music that he's clearly influenced by, which he's rocking a very fun kind of 50s sort of balladeer look. A bit of a sort of a Bo Diddley kind of hambone beat going on in there. He's clearly into sort of 50s stuff. And yet there's a sort of monstrous, distorted drum pattern behind it. I thought it was an interesting conjugation of things. I know very little about Willie Moon. I know he's been very big in the style mags. And I don't really know what his other records sound like, actually.
Expert analysis.
But no, I just thought it was good. I thought it was a good, intriguing little record. It's about 1 minute and 50 seconds long. Well, Rebecca, we'll go to you.
That's good that it's short. But the problem is, I think sometimes you have to be in the right frame of mind for this kind of thing.
Sure.
I spent last week at the Ice and Airwaves Festival and got back late on Sunday night, and I still feel a little bit delicate from that week, and this is not what I need to hear.
Why did you do like loads of drugs?
I went wild. No, it's just people in Reykjavik tend to
drink
a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm still slightly recovering from it.
Wow.
And so this is, not what I needed to hear. Also, I thought it was Willie Mason. I heard Willie M.
I did too.
And I put it on.
Oh, he's changed.
Yeah, I was expecting something a little bit more soothing than this, and that's not quite what we got.
Michael.
Like Rebecca, once I got over the shock of it not being Willie Mason singing some kind of reverie about, oh, me pet bird's flown off, the dog's a bit mopey today. Once I got over that, it's an extraordinary record. I'm not sure I ever want to hear it again, but it's an extraordinary record. It seems so blindingly obvious. Why did no one ever before think to combine the Bo Diddley beat with wild, crazy, modern distortion?
Yeah.
Once you do it like that, you think, oh, wow, well, of course it makes sense. But then you think back through pop history and think, well, actually, people do this every few years. And if I were to search for a historical comparison, it wouldn't be Bo Diddley, it would be Westworld.
Wow.
Sonic Boom Boy.
Which is
exactly the same logic. Take the chassis of 50s pop and add on one of the latest contemporary Sonics.
Zig Sputnik.
Well, no, I think Westworld had better songs than Zig Sputnik. Well, they had one better song. than ZZ Sputnik's one.
The follow-up, Banana Bamboo, is no picnic.
Westworld headlined the Slam Music Festival in 1986, which had to get cancelled when 37 tickets were sold.
Wow. Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. But Sonic Boom Boy was great, and this reminds me of Sonic Boom Boy.
Excellent. Well, I mean, there are worse things, I think, to sound like. I take that as an equivocal thumbs up.
I'm just nodding and smiling at everything you're saying.
Have you never heard Sonic Boom Boy, by the way?
Oh, it's ace.
It's brilliant.
Sonic Boom, a Boom Boy. It's
like, oh, amazing. Yeah, no, it's kind of like a sort of post ZZ Sputnik, post Big Audio Dynamite-y kind of.
It's the first wave of rock groups using samples and using electronic techniques on top of a traditional guitar rock chassis, as I keep saying.
Yeah,
I would go and listen to it, but it's not going to top that performance that you two just gave me.
He's got a clip of it. He's going to play it. Wow, this is it, people. This is using the internet. We're going to play a bit of Westworld.
And it's going to sound nothing like it, is it?
I mean, we didn't need to do that because obviously it was you know, like having Westworld. I keep saying Westlife. Wouldn't it be amazing if that was like Westlife's farewell single?
That would have been great.
Just total fucking
hats off to Westlife.
Yeah, amazing. Anyway, look, Willie Moon's heavily Westworld influenced I Want to Be Your Man is out on the 24th of October on Lug Records, which I don't think exists anymore, but
evidently
still does. Our last track today, Michael's Choice. That's Fanzine and Roman Holiday. One half a double A-side 7-inch single. The other track is called My Stupid Brain. They're touring in November. Michael, you brought this in.
They couldn't have picked a much more suitable name for their band, could they?
Fanzine. Yeah.
Fanzine. They sound like a band who you would read about in a fanzine. There are some kinds of music that are like cardigans or like a plate of spaghetti carbonara or like, you know, mushy chips on a Saturday night after you've been to the pub. You know there is absolutely nothing sensationally original about them. You know there's nothing sensationally fashionable about them. You just think, you know what, that's just what I fancy. Mm. I like a bit of that. And I do love that sound. That kind of early 90s.
Teenage fan club.
Very early teenage fan club. There's a fantastic riff that opens the song, which you don't really hear on the clip that we just played. And there's that sense of drawlingness about them. Drawlingness? Hmm. To be honest, when I first heard them, I assumed they were American. I was halfway through writing a little thing about them for Film and Music before I thought, I better just check which state they come from. Hmm. Oh, they're from London.
Are they really?
That knocked me out of the water.
Wow.
But I think it's quite interesting. There's a little mini wave of English slacker bands at the moment. There's Yuck, there's Mazes, there's this lot, all doing quite a similar thing. Mm. All looking back to American music of 1990, 1991.
Signed to Fat Possum?
Signed to Fat Possum. That was the other thing that made me think they were American. Because who else apart from gnarled and grizzled Americans gets onto Fat Possum?
Well, I guess I think the thing is they've got to sign some other people now because
their
roster is dropping off the twig one by one, isn't it? These guys are like 100 years old or something. You know, all these old.
So they got 80 years out of Fanzine, probably.
I liked
120 album deal.
Well, much a worse deal than some of the old bluesmen signed. not with Fat Possum, I'm sure. You know, financially. I meant legendarily, bluesmen used to sign very bad record deals. I'm sure Fat Possum really looked after.
Fat Possum, we love you.
Yeah, amazing.
We're not talking about you.
There's no suggestion of shady financial practices. Now, I liked it too. I liked that kind of music when I was, you know what I mean, young. You know what I mean, young. I mean young. you know, it's not doing anything different. It's not doing anything new. It's interesting that people are going back to that.
Yeah.
It's kind of immediately pre-grunge.
Yeah,
or that's sort of
right.
Around the same time as grunge.
We've talked about this before, you and I, when we talk about Yuck, I think. Not necessarily on the podcast, but in conversation, because actually we do talk to each other outside
Amazing.
The studio. But those years, those couple of years, I don't know, between, say, the second Dinosaur, actually the third Dinosaur Jr. album, Bug, and grunge, when there was loads of this stuff suddenly coming around. It only works if you've got the tunes. I mean, and I wonder if part of the number of groups doing this kind of thing is a reaction against, you know, the prevalence in vaguely alternative music of glitches and clicks and things that are built around texture and sound rather than around melody. I think actually, yeah, British alternative music has been a bit short on melody for a couple of years.
And it's fair enough.
Part of me feels it's a shame that they're having to rediscover melody by going back to a sound that's 20 years old. Another part of me thinks, well, I love this kind of music, so
that's fair enough.
Why should I feel guilty?
Rebecca, do you feel in any way guilty about liking this?
No, or
disliking it?
No, not at all. I quite enjoyed it. I think I can see what you mean. It's quite warm compared to a lot of what's been coming out for the past few years. It reminds me of the sort of bands who you would see on My So-Called Life, you know, like Buffalo Tom kind of playing at the house party and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I thought it was quite pleasant.
Well, that's quite pleasant.
That's out on November the 7th on Fat Possum Records. And as I said before, they're touring in November too.
I shall try and go and see
them. I saw York Live and
You want to say to them, snap out of it, lads. Cheer up. Just chins up.
It wasn't even chins
look
up.
At the
it was
audience.
Just a bit like, oh, come on.
They've also got that thing Yuck do, which drives me mad about indie groups. When they think, oh, for our last song, we're going to do that as 10
minutes. Yeah, noise.
We've got amazing noise. I'm blowing people's minds. No, you just sound really tinny and it's got boring because we've all seen indie bands do this 4,000 times
before.
Yeah,
there used to be that thing where there was a brief period where every indie band, by law, had to encore with an enormously extended version of What Goes On by the Velvet Underground. this period in the late 80s when that happened. Anyway, moving on. Some comments from last week's programme. Or rather from the blog about last week's programme. Lots of love for Luke Haynes, as mentioned earlier. Nigel B thanked Jude profusely for bringing it in. And Kebabette said that he rocks. There was some defence of the Metallica and Lou Reed collaboration that Dom Lawson was fairly forthright about last week. I think the phrase he used to describe Lou Reed was a mumbling old tosspot, which was quite Sad Statue said, I completely agree with Dom, but the more I listen to it, the more I get what Lou Reed is trying to do. It's essentially a James Hetfield riff tape, which is exactly what I want from Metallica. Fair enough, Sad Statue. Although, This Is Me Typing a Name was more blunt. It's shit.
We've got a Lou Reed and Metallica interview in this week's Film and Music. And Lou Reed, God, he's so cheerful at the moment.
Really?
He barely patronises the interviewer at all.
I think he's on his best behaviour around Metallica, though, because I read an interview with them in another rock music magazine, and he wasn't, you know, being a cock in that either.
I think he's afraid of James Hetfield.
You think so?
Yeah, come on. James Hetfield, huge bloke. Lou Reed, little mini-cheek.
James Hetfield's not scary. Cuddly. Just want to give him a cuddle?
It looks like the Cowardly Lion.
James Hetfield missed his child's birth because he was out shooting things.
A bear. I believe it was bears he was shooting.
He's not that cuddly.
He wasn't shooting clay pigeons, it was a bear. He was in Russia.
I'd still give him a cuddle.
Well, look, going back to This Is Me Typing My Name's Opinions on this record, he said it's shit. It actually makes everything else they've done sound shitter. I honestly have no idea why Lou Reed now feels the need to piss all over his legacy at every available opportunity. I think, in fairness to Lou Reed, he was pissing all over his legacy. You know, I suspect this is me typing a name before you were born. Because, I mean, Lou Reed really started, you know,
30 years ago. Oh, well, longer. I love you, Diane.
Oh, well, I mean, there's that. I love you, Suzanne.
Suzanne, yes, that's right.
Amazing. Have you ever heard the original rapper of Mistral?
No.
Lou Reed's hip-hop track. Just mind blowing. But I mean, you could say he was pissing all over his legacy when he released, you know, Rock and Roll Animal or Metal Machine.
But then,
music,
frankly,
or...
I think he's secure enough in his legacy, isn't he, not to worry? He's someone who's earned the right to piss on his legacy.
Yeah, absolutely. No, he can
piss
do
away,
what he,
Lou.
He can do what he wants. And there's something, I mean, I hated that album with A Vengeance. I can never imagine listening to it again. But I would say, at least, you know, Lou Reed, now in his dotage, visibly in his dotage, is going out the way he came in, scowling in black with a basic general fuck everything attitude.
But he's wearing shorts in the promo pictures for this.
Lou Reed's wearing shorts.
I think so.
Oh, no.
He just come back from skating, so he's got to change.
So there you go. Anyway, look, thanks for all your comments. Leave thoughts about this week's music on the blog or tweet us. The links, as ever, are at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Next up, Jennifer Allen is going to broaden our musical horizons and take us through the world of avant rock and electronica.
Hello. Hello, I'm Jennifer Lucy Allen. I'm an online editor for The Wire magazine. I'm here to tell you what you need to know about avant rock, electronica, and stuff that sounds like your washing machine cycle. So the first thing up is Alvin Otto, and this is from his album Universe. Alvin Otto is Karsten Nikolai, who runs the Rastanoton label, whose 15th birthday it is at the moment. They've got some live shows on celebrating in Rome, Tokyo and Berlin at Berghain. Universe moves on from his last album concept, which turned data files into sound. This album is really abrasive, it's totally digital, it's like got radar tweets and this really serrated, pure digital noise in it. Nobody does pops, digital pops like Rastanoton. It's totally danceable, which is really different to his work from Sakamoto, which is, whilst it's equally electronic, it's a lot quieter and has a lot more soul. This is something that I'd actually think I'd dance to on a dance floor. Next up, Julia Holter's Tragedy. This is a concept record, and the track So Lilies is a good example of why it's interesting. The concept behind this record is a play by Euripides called Hippolytus, which is written in 428 BC. Her record tracks the narrative in a really literal way, and she sort of makes these tracks that tell the story and set a scene. It's a Greek tragedy, so everyone dies and everyone ends up miserable. The story is that Hippolytus is this really pure and chaste dude, and he does not show the correct deference to Aphrodite, who gets really naffed off. She swears revenge on him, makes his stepmother fall in love with him. His stepmother is really embarrassed and stops. Stepmother calls on Poseidon, bulls rear up from the sea, nearly maul him to death. The vocals are really good on this. She has a style that's either quite wispy vocals or it's a bit more like Laurie Anderson, where she sort of digitises it or vocoders it. And she puts this on top of field recordings, on top of some little digital synths. It's really nice. This is Ernst Karel and a record of Swiss Mountain Transport Systems. Ernst Karel works at Harvard. His last record was recordings of the research laboratories at Harvard with lots of people swishing about, lots of chemicals and things like that. This one is from some trips around Switzerland in 2008 inside various railways, cable cars, chairlifts, that sort of thing. I don't listen to many field recording records, but this one is probably one of my most listened to albums of the year, even though some people might debate that whether it's music or not. It's got this rhythm to it that you can hear the mechanics of these old clunky systems. Some of them, since he recorded them, have been replaced, and you can hear you're inside these little cable cars, you can hear the coldness of the air outside. You can hear the clanging of the steel. You can hear the rhythm of things passing through mechanisms. And it's got a real soul and a rhythm, and it's really soothing. final album is Bill Allcutt's How the Thing Sings on Editions Migo. This new album is more of the same from Bill Allcutt, which is exactly what everyone wants. He used to be in a band called Harry Pussy, who played loud, abrasive. Lots of people found it offensive, said he had no technique. He didn't understand that, said he did have technique, and then he came out with this, and now everyone knows that he's got technique. There's a real physical element to Bill Allcutt's playing. You can hear the strain of the instrument. You can hear him twanging the strings. You can hear the metallic clang. And it's also very loose, but rooted in blues. That's the winner for me.
Jennifer Allen there with some experimental stuff. Either of you interested in the musical avant-garde? Have we just wasted our time doing that?
I think everyone thinks they secretly like the musical avant-garde, don't they? But it takes the people who are really at the avant-garde to make you realise, oh no, actually, I like verse, chorus, verse, middle eight, verse, chorus. Mm.
Are you a song?
I like Rihanna.
You like Rihanna?
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, well, you know, I like experimental music, so there you go. We're going to have to leave it there, I'm afraid. That's all for now. My thanks to Rebecca, and my thanks to Michael.
Thank you
for coming in. We will be back next Friday. Till then, thanks for listening. I'm Alexis Petridis. The programme is produced by Scott Cawley. Bye-bye.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a 1 month, no commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details. For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.